them, the radius of half of the light of these gases come are changing from 10 parsec to 1 kiloparsecs. And so they are more extended from these globular clusters in the Milky Way halo and halo, and they are just, we can find them by this light half radius that is much bigger. And almost they are spherical symmetric, yeah.
There is the issue of, since the people are affected by the Milky Way gravitational potential, some of them are not virialized by states. They're not virialized. So when you do an antibody simulation calculation, you find that, as published, that the MOL is seriously distorted, significantly increased. But in fact, some of these dwarfs are not, don't have a large halo.
What we are saying is that it's completely correct. It depends what's the distance of these dwarf galaxies to the Milky Way. They have different star formation histories, and they have different mass to light ratios. But with a very naive calculation, we can show that the ones that are far from the Milky Way nowadays they are virialized and. They are not in a gravitational interaction with the Milky Way. So one of the ways is just looking at the streaming velocity, gradient of the velocity of these stars in these dwarf galaxies. If we don't see any gradient in them, and there is a dispersion velocities on these dwarf galaxies, it shows that they're somehow in a virialized state. But it's not completely concrete that we can assume them completely virialized objects. So, for example, for these two forces that I write for the tidal forces from the Milky Way, yeah, it's a very naive calculation, and the internal forces of the dwarf galaxies. You can compare these two ratios. This is the velocity of the Milky Way. This is the half-light radius of these dwarf galaxies. And this is the distance of these dwarf galaxies from the Milky Way. And the dwarfs that we are looking, these four that I mentioned, the Fornax, Draco, Sculptor, are in the distance of more than 100 kiloparsecs. And by comparing these two terms, we can show that the internal force is 100 times much bigger than the tidal forces that that could be there. So this is a figure by Strigari et al. In the Nature 2008 that they measure 18 dwarf galaxies. The blue one are the classical one with the higher luminosities, and the red one is the lower ultra faint one, recently discovered in the SDSS. And what they show that independent of the very large luminosity range that they have from 10 to the 3 to 10 to the 7, all of them are sharing the same mass for the dwarf galaxies. And it shows that there is some scale that is independent of their star formation history or their baryonic interactions. I will come back to this graph and we'll show that how this is important to the address to some questions. So eventually why we are interested in Milky Way satellites. So they can give us some hints on two major study fields. One is the galaxy formation in small scales, because in the mass scale, less than 10 to the 7, 10 to the 6 solar masses, we don't see any galaxies. Is this can be a, give us a hint or specific small scale in galaxy formation or not, when why it suppressed galaxy formation in small scale. And the second question is, what's the nature of this dark matter? Is there any specific small scale dark matter that the subhalos can exist? And there are some subcategory of this question related to the second one, that the indirect detection of this dark matter, if they have some cored potential, maybe they increase the signal of indirect dark matter detection. Or it can be a test of alternative theories of gravity, like Mond and Moog, as as Mond shows a specific acceleration acceleration scale, but this galaxy seems to have some specific velocity scale. And this can be some test for these alternative theories. Also, these dwarf galaxies can be used as a laboratory for test of cold dark matter based scenario of structure formation. As we know that this cold dark matter structure formation is based on the assumption that dark matter is cold, collisionless, and by gravitational instability, we have these structures. So we can test all of this assumption in this structure formation paradigm. And finally, what the recent challenge of cold dark matter paradigm that will address them shortly. So the second part of the talk, what's the kinematic of stars and the question in astrophysics and cosmology and what the people are doing. So the question, the major goal of this kinematic modeling is to find out what's the total mass distribution, the visible and dark matter one. And the second question is what's the orbital properties of this tracer or stars, or what's this 3D velocity, their means dispersion and the higher moments. Or we can change the question and say what's the phase space density of the matter, dark matter or visible matter in astrophysical systems. So this classical book of Binet and Treiman is a very good reference for this, and also this review, this article by Manon and Boyer. And what are the observable that we are going to use them to address these two questions? One is the surface density or surface brightness of the tracer stars, the data that we have. And the second is the line of sight velocity distribution. This is the three parameters that we have from the observation. And we want to deduce from these three parameters what's the six parameter phase space density. So in very naively in the first glance, we see that there will be a degeneracy in the parameters. So what people do with this kinematic modeling? The first approach is using this parametric function for distribution of the matter and the orbits and anisotropy function. I will show what's this anisotropy function or what's the properties of the orbits. This is the first approach. And the second approach is using the non-parametric model for anisotropy function or equivalently the phase space density. So what people do, they use this collisionless Boltzmann equation, and this is the 3D velocity, and this is the all gravitational potential comes to in, and they find Jean's equation, which is the velocity obtained from the Boltzmann equation that shows how the mean velocity is dependent to the potential and the anisotropy dispersion tensor, which is the moment of the velocity, and this density, which is density of the tracer, the stars. So with the three assumptions, the absence of the streaming motion or the absence of the tidal forces that in the first slide I showed, the dynamical equilibrium and spherical symmetry, this is the assumptions. And all the result I obtain is based on these three assumptions. In a spherical case, we can write the Jean's equation like this, where we find when we have this radial velocity, which is the observable, and this is the total mass of the dark matter and the stars, and this is the beta function, or this anisotropy parameter that I'm talking about, that shows how is the orbits of the stars are in this astrophysical system, which is defined as the relative magnitude of tangential velocities to the radial velocities. And you can characterize three different categories. The radial orbits are where the beta is equal to 1 when you put the tangential velocity to 0. And beta is equal to 0 is isotropic orbits that all these components are equal to each other. And beta goes to minus infinity is the circular orbits where this radial velocity is 0. So by choosing what's the function of this beta r and what is the density of tracer, and using this radial velocity, we want to find what is the total mass of these systems. So what people are doing, they just use the projected line of sight profile, and they get this equation. And they have this stellar distribution, for example, a King model or Plummer model. And they're using a parametric model for this anisotropy function. And they plug it then. And using this data that they have, the line of sight velocity, they want to find the mass. So as you've seen, there is this degeneracy in the mass and anisotropy function. And the other important thing that I want to mention, that this smooth parameterization of this parameter beta, that in the next slide I will show how this anisotropy parameter is related to the phase space density, it makes us that we cannot see some of the features in phase space density. So this is very briefly shows that how this anisotropy parameter beta is related to the phase space density. For example, in the ergodic case, when you have all isotropic orbits where beta is equal to zero, it's equivalent to have this phase space density that's a function of the energy. And by Eddington formula, you can relate the potential of the mass to the phase space density. In the other hand, the models with constant beta is equal to the phase space density that have angular momentum dependence, but in a specific way, like this. Or the models that Osipkov and Merritt in 79 and 85 they use this radially biased. So most of the orbits are radially because this term is bigger than zero. Is equal to have a phase space density that this has specific function. A very nice graph by Richstone and Treeman in 84 that shows how this degeneracy will change our results. So look at this is a specific profile for the stars. This is the distance. This is the line of sight dispersion velocity that we observe, and this is the curves for three different choices of anisotropy parameter. As we have seen, in the smaller scales, if you choose the radial orbits, you get more line of sight. And if you go to the larger radiuses, for the circular, you get more circular velocity. This is obvious because when you are going to the inner parts, so the radial velocity has more contribution to the line of sight. But when you go to the outer part, because the density is low, the stars get more kick when they're passing from the nearest position from the galaxy. And in the nearest position from the galaxy is where the radial component comes to zero and the circular component is important. Yeah. Yes, it is the same profile. Yeah. So you have the same distribution of the matter, but different choices of the anisotropy parameter, and you get different result for the line of sight velocity. That's the point.
But is it consistent? Can you have a different dispersion velocity? You have this different distribution in the phase space, but in the spatial space, you have the same profile.
So in this work, they are not going to look at the phase space density. What's the phase space? They are just using the Jeans equation that I have shown in the previous slide, that they choose this beta function and they plug the same tracer velocity and they get the line of sight velocity. Well, what they are doing this, they are going to compare this with the observations.
It's not the
profile of density is the integration over the velocities. So it changed the phase space, six-dimensional phase space density, but it can produce the same three-dimensional tracer. That's the point, yeah.
Just to get a physical picture, so radial orbits are the ones which have a very large electricity, or how should I imagine
this? Yeah, exactly. So what people then are talking? Then by using this parameterization for anisotropy, they're saying about precise measurement of dwarf galaxies mass. This is the figure from Strigari in 2007. This axis is they use this NFW profile. The x-axis is the free parameter of the density, and this is the scale, and this is the one sigma parameters, the contours that show what the parameters they can be obtained for these dwarf galaxies. And this is the Sculptor, Draco, Fornax, and Sexton. I'm mentioning them because we'll show the new counterplots for them. And the other work that's done by Walker, they show that instead of choosing this 300 parsec that Strigar used, they say that instead you're going to measure the mass in half-right radius. That's more plausible radius because you have more data than 300 parsecs because the dwarf galaxies have different luminosities. If you're going to look at their half-right radius, you can find this profile from the masses they obtained from the Jeans equation. And what they are arguing that this mass profile is universal for these dwarf galaxies. So what's the next approach? The next approach that instead of using this parametric and specific case of anisotropy space, we are going to look at the phase space density and see what we get from there. So in this non-parametric anisotropy function, I mentioned just three previous work. There are more, but these are somehow related to our work, and they use a somehow similar method. One is the deriving the mass distribution of the M87 by the Wu and the Treeman. The other is the axisymmetric 2-3 integral model, and the other is Schwarzschild method that is quite similar to use this non-parametric phase space density, and they use the orbit-based method and orbital library. I will discuss this later and how it differs from our work. So what we assume now? So we have this spherical symmetric case, and we assume that these dwarf galaxies are in equilibrium. And so by the Jeans theorem, we know that this phase space density will be a function of the energy and angular momentum as the constant of the integration. Then we are going to use this NFW potential with two parameters of the density and scale. And also we assume the Plummer profile for the potential of the stars that we have. So this is the setup of our approach. And what are the observables? As I say, we have the position of the stars and the radial velocities, or the probability of finding each star in the sky plane and the velocity, radial velocity, which will be an integration over this Boltzmann function over the line of sight and the velocities in the plane.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Potential for dark matter
and stellar part, they are different. Yeah. So the potential for the star's profile they get from the light, they have the light profile and they fit different model like the King model and the Plummer model, and they find what is the two-dimensional density distribution of stars, and by deprojection they get this three-dimensional distribution. That's what they do with the stars. By the dark matter potential, you can choose different models, but not their profile. They just dark matter. Yeah. Exactly. This is obtained from the luminosity light profile. So what's our choice? So we expand this Boltzmann function as sum over the beans of the energy and angular momentum. So we are saying that each energy and each angular momentum point, we will have some amplitude for this Boltzmann function, and our total Boltzmann function or phase space density is sum over all these beans. And what we want to find is that for each energy and each angular momentum, what will be this amplitude of phase space density. So what's the difference between this choosing anisotropy parameter? That in the phase space density, we are not assuming that our phase space density is smooth, and it can have some features. As you see, there is some delta Dirac functions for the angular momentum and the energy. And the number of free parameters we add to this model is coming from the number of beans we choose in these two directions. So we can plug this new definition to the observable that we have. That's the probability of finding the stars in the plane and the radial velocity. And we find that this observable is a function of these free parameters. and a new function named m with two indices related for each beam, which is a function of the position of the stars and the velocity of the stars. So as we know that the distribution of the stars are discrete and they are independent, so we have to minimize the chi square for the Poissonian. Yes. Oh, okay.
Actually, can I just ask, I'm confused. You're fixing both the dark matter potential and the stellar potential?
Stellar potential is fixed by using the light profile, and we use the parameters we get from the light profile.
So what are you doing with the dark matter?
So with the dark matter, we choose the NFW profile with the free parameters. We don't know what's the rho S and RS.
Okay.
What are the free parameters? Yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay, so we have to minimize this k square, which is relate this observable, and this is the total number of the total number of the stars we have for each dwarf galaxy, which can be found by also by these FABs, the free parameters. It's just the integration over the plane and over the line of sight velocity. That's a function of a new parameter, NAB, which is independent from the position and the velocity of the stars, and it depends in which beam of energy and angular momentum we are looking. And what about the stars? So we have two kind of data for the stars. One is the spectroscopic star. This is for Fornax. This is about 2,000 stars that we have their radial velocity. This is the inputs for our line of sight velocity. And the other is the photometric stars, which is order of magnitude much larger than the spectroscopic one because it's easier to do photometry than spectroscopy. And this is used for finding the profile of the stars. So by, again, in the third term, by an integration over the observable, over the velocities, you can find what will be the profile of the stars in the sky that we are looking, that it's again a function of these three parameters and a new parameter PAB, that shortly I will show how they related to our observable and quantities. So this is the total and the final cos squared that we want to minimize this. Let's just go through it. This first term is the from Poissonian distribution, and this is the observable. This is the free parameters, and this is the MAB that the observable plug in, and all this term is equal to the probability of finding the stars. The second term is the total number of the stars that we have the spectroscopic data. The third term here is a chi square find by the light profile of the stars, and this term is the light profile of the stars, and this is the term related to the density of the stars, and this function is a normalization function because the number of spectroscopic stars is less than the photometric stars. This is the number of photometric stars, and this is the spectroscopic stars. So this is a normalization factor, and this is what our model is predicting, and this is the data. And also, this is the number of the stars, and this is what our model is predicting. So you have not to look at these MABs and NABs and PABs, but so they are related to the potential parameters and the energy and angular momentum, and the free parameters of the NFW just plugged in each of these functions that we have here through the potential. So we are going to look at these four galaxies from left to right is the Draco, Sexton, Fornax, Sculptor, and this is the number of the stars that we have their radial velocities. The second line shows the half-light radius of each of these galaxies. The third and fourth line is the parameters of their stellar distribution that we used in the Plummer. And the final line is the luminosity that we choose as the normalization factor in the previous slide that I show. And this is the reference of the stars that we are going to use. So how can we address this problem? So this is the K-square we have. This is the three parameters of our model that shows how the dark matter is distributed. This is the weight function of the Boltzmann function, and this is the input. So the light profile, the position of the stars, and line of sight velocity, and the errors related to each of them. So the method that the VU is using is the method of the maximum likelihood analysis. So there is some assumption in their method that they use that the distribution in the phase space is Gaussian. So for each parameter of the NFW profile, they maximize the likelihood for the Boltzmann function, and they go to the next point and do it again, and they find the global maximum. But there is a assumption hidden there, is that the distribution in the Boltzmann function or phase space density is Gaussian. That's not what we want to address, because we want to put it free and find any future in this Boltzmann function. So instead, we are going to use this Monte Carlo Markov chain method. So as I say, our three parameters are these FABs and ρs and rs. We are using the binning of 10 to 10 for the energy angular momentum. So we have 102 free parameters. And then we want to marginalize over the amplitude of phase space density and find the ρs and rs. So very briefly, what's this Monte Carlo Markov chain method is, instead of finding the minimum of the K-square or maximum likelihood, we choose the random steps with the probability. If the chi-square is becoming less, we accept the step. If it's not, we accept it with the probability related to the likelihood. So after enough steps, we can find a fair distribution that we think that our parameter space we have. So we use this Metropolis-Hastings algorithms. We check for the convergence and with different initial conditions for this Boltzmann function. And we need quite near a million steps for finding the convergence because of the huge number of the free parameters that we have. So what people usually did for this Jeans equation, there are four or five parameters, and after 10,000 steps, they get converged. But we need near a million steps to get the convergence. And we use the unity priority for the free parameters, and with this acceptance rate, and around for 60 hours, for example, for the Fornax that has most number of the stars, we can get the distribution in the parameter space, and we can find what's the rho s and rs. And what we get is this new counter plots for these four galaxies that we are looking with the number of binnings of 10 and 10. And again, this is the free parameters rho s of the dark matter profile and rs. And this is the one sigma and two sigma counters. And you can obviously compare this with the precise measurement of this Jeans method that they use very specific model for anisotropy, and see how our errors become bigger and how different our counterplots become by just relaxing this specific assumption in the orbital case of the stars. So the other question is, what's the mass profile we get from this method and from these counters for these dwarf galaxies? So what we use, this is the dark matter mass from the NFW profile. So we plug each accepted point in our Monte Carlo Markov chain and find the mass of the dark matter profile, and then add the star profile mass to it, and we get the total mass, and we find the 1 sigma and 2 sigma levels. And this is our new mass profiles that we get for these four galaxies. This is the scale in kiloparsec. This is the mass scale in logarithmic in solar masses. And the red one is the 2 sigma and 1 sigma. And these points are what the people get from the previous analysis from the Jeans method. And the error bars for them is very small. And in contrast, our error bars is much bigger, two or three order of magnitude in the mass scales for each of these dwarf galaxies. So,
it seems, why Draper, Sculptor, and Sexton generalizing things tends to lead to less mass, but one has to generalizing it tends to lead to more?
Good question. I'm not sure because it will be different causes because one views more star data than the previous users. There's some unpublished data. We have more data on them. The other thing is that this result maybe will be somehow affected by the light profile we choose, but not so much. But the important thing is that how our result is related to the number of stars that we use for this method. You see the error bars for the Fornax and Sculptor is much less than the other methods. This is because we have 2,000 stars here and 1,300 stars, but these are the order of the hundreds. So I'm not sure what will be the answer, but there are different light profile and there are different catalogs that may affect some effects like this.
And they must be related to the anisotropy, right? Because the first plot you showed, the fact that your masses can be lower for these three, say that you have more preference for more circular orbits, because then that will lower the mass enclosed compared to a more radio profile.
Yeah.
And so by generalizing somehow with these three, you've been inclined to accept
It's a good thing to know what's the distribution of the stars we have in the scale, and if we find that we have a lot of stars, and it's obvious is that in the smaller scales, and we just release this assumption of the radial or orbital circular orbits, we can just show what's happening here. Yeah, that could be a reason.
Also, for these, have you looked at what kind of function for beta are these air bands correspond to? Like, just to do some representative plots, say, at where the measurements are, as you scan through your allowed space,
mm-hmm.
what kind of functions are you, do those, what kind of beta of R functions do those correspond to? Yes.
Oh, that.
How bumpy are they? How many features? How badly fit are they by the simple parametric model? What do these beta look like? If I go for a point that's really allowed by your analysis, but very, very far off from theirs.
Yeah, that's an idea, but I'm not sure how. We have to think that how we can do this numerically because. There's a lot of number of binnings, and we have a million points for each Boltzmann function, and we have to find for each bin what is the phase space density distribution and how we can translate it to the beta function. But that's a real thing that you're saying, that how we can say our phase space density distribution is related to this beta function. Yeah. Yeah. What's the mass profile of the stars?
You've shown the mass profile.
Yeah.
What uncertainty is associated with that?
With the mass profile? I don't have the plots, but we have these error bars for the profile of this plumber, and we can plot this. I think they're much smaller, and in the 2 sigma, we need this dark matter as well. So this is for comparison of our masses that we get for these four galaxies to the previous ones, just showing that how much our error bars are bigger than the previous analysis. You can look at the mean value and the 1 sigma levels of the mass that we get. So how can this new approach address to the challenge of the cold dark matter paradigm, and what are these challenges and how we can address them? So the first question in this cold dark matter paradigm is the missing satellite problem, that as we know, this cell payload formed in higher redshift, and they survive in the host halo of Milky Way. And the observed Milky Way satellites are order of magnitude lower than what we find in the Lambda CDM-based simulation. And there's this problem that where are the rest of these subhalo? Are they don't contain any galaxies in them, or just they don't any real subhalo lower than their mass did not exist? So there are some solutions, like the modification of cold dark matter paradigm, to address this question, to answer this question in a way that these subhalos that we are seeing, that they host galaxy, are the smallest clump of dark matter. This is go to this modification of cold dark matter paradigm. And the second question is the astrophysical answer to this question, that how the feedback, the astronomical process, like reionization and supernova feedback, can say that the galaxy formation is insufficient from some scales lower. So this is two probable solutions for this massive missing satellite problem. And the other problem that they mentioned with this cold dark matter profile is the problem of too big to fail, is that if they get, this is the velocity, this is the distance, this is the data from M-body simulation of Aquarius, which is high resolution M-body simulation for six Milky Way type halos with different masses. And this is the velocity profile, or equivalently mass profile, are the 10 highest subhalo found in M-body simulations. So in the other hand, they plot the velocity profile, or the velocity in half-light of radius versus the distance for the non-classical dwarf galaxies. And what they found, that in all this simulation, the known galaxies, have lower circular velocity. Or in the other sense, this massive subhalo cannot host our luminous galaxies, Milky Way satellites that we are seeing. So the answer is, where are these big subhalos? This is the second challenge with this cold dark matter paradigm. And This is the circular the circular velocity of the star. So it shows how These points are the satellite galaxies. Okay, these solid lines are obtained from M-body simulation. They're going to choose the highest mass of the subhalos, the 10 that has most massive subhalos, and they find their velocity profile, or their mass, and they compare it with the observation. So the problem is.
This is the circular velocity of the stars inside the satellite galaxy. So if you go see inside the satellite galaxy and look at the stars, then this would be the circular velocity. It's not the circular velocity of the satellite, it's the circular velocity inside.
Inside the star. It's a representative of the mass of the.
And this can be where is the mass?
Milky Way. So this is our result with the new mass profile we get. This is the median of the mass for these four galaxies. This is the 1 sigma, and this is the 2 sigma. And as our error bars is bigger for these dwarf galaxies, it shows that could be, very conservatively we can say that maybe one of the answers to this missing, not missing, too big to fail problem could be that we don't use the very generic phase space density. If you use this generic phase space density, maybe we get more massive, these subhalos will be more massive, and they can explain this too big to be failed problem.
So this is the median of the four systems?
Yeah.
Because
we're doing a static, we are not looking at the 10 dwarf, this is the representative of the dwarf galaxy, Milky Way dwarf galaxies. So we cannot just put the plots here. Because this light, these velocity profiles or mass profiles are not equal one-to-one to this one of this Milky Way. This is a statistical point of view that if we have large mass subhalos, this is the velocity, and if we have this class of Milky Way satellites with this mass error bars, they will get these error bars here. The other approach could be that do the same thing with this figure that I showed before, that for each dwarf galaxy, put the life half radius and find the what's the error bars. And the error bars will go to this, will be somehow higher. But this is some ensemble averaging over these four dwarf galaxies that we have. It could be the idea that we think that is these subhalos is not related one to one to each of these galaxies, so you cannot compare that if you plot the Fornax and see this is the error bar of the Fornax, so this is the subhalo related to the Fornax and the other to the Draco. So we are saying that if you get this mass profile and we are looking the median and 1 sigma and 2 sigma of these galaxies, will be something like that. But on the other hand, we can do it for the individual galaxy as well. Yeah.
So what is that MA? You have MA.
So MA is the, this is the Milky Way mass that they used for this 10 profile of subhalos from the M-body simulations.
That's the mass of the
Milky Way.
Host.
Exactly. No, it's so. This is the.
Your calculation.
Yeah.
Independent of the where this galaxy is located, is it true, or it's it has no correlation with the Big Hadron?
Yes, our calculation is not related to what's the Milky Way mass. Yeah. So we can compare it with this all of these six. We can do this for all of these six simulations that we have for the Aquarius simulation.
Since you have this rotationless velocity curves, there are two relationships that we know work. One is the Tully Fisher law, the other is the Faber-Chapson relationship. The last one connects dispersion velocity to the velocity. And what happens if you check for these in your velocity curves? These two are known to work very well.
Do they work for satellite galaxies?
Well, they're galaxies. This is the problem. They're not. These things are small and diffuse.
I'm not sure what is this fundamental plane or this Faber-Jackson relation for these dwarf galaxies, but we can go and check it.
There
are not.
Faber-Jackson is a bit of a gap.
Yeah.
You can use it for edge-on spirals. I'm just concerned about dropping the clusters at the same mass. They don't have any dark. Why?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
About one or two, the ones we know.
Globular clusters have about 1,000 times the density of these systems. Globular clusters have about 1,000 times the density of these systems. So they have the same mass concentrated in a scale that's 10 times small. So they have very similar velocity dispersions. But the scale is 10 times smaller. So the
velocity dispersions are totally.
Yeah, that's because they're 1,000 times denser. The stars are packed into 1,000 times smaller. In the globulars? There's no evidence for it.
Why?
Because the stars are packed enough into a small enough volume. You don't need it to generate this velocity dispersion. I mean, it could be there, it's just you wouldn't see it if it wasn't.
Okay, so let's go to the final, the core cost problem. That there's also some challenges about this dark matter, universal dark matter profile with this NFW, that some of this result from the genes equation shows that some of these dark matter halos must have core potential. So for checking this, we extend this NFW potential and adding these free parameters as the core parameter, and we do again our Monte Carlo Markov chain analysis, and we plot the k-square of finding this RC, the core, for scales in kiloparsec, and we find that there is some evidence for the core, but it's very low. It's not even one sigma. So in our analysis with this new method, it shows that the NFW profile, it works as well now. So, and finally, last points, I want to make the conclusions and what are the future prospects. The main issues that I want to, as the main points of this talk, is that the Jayne's theorem shows that for the spherical symmetric case, the general non-parametric phase space density is a function of energy and angular momentum, and we choose a non-specific function for them. And instead of using this maximum likelihood analysis that they assume a Gaussian distribution and smooth distribution of phase space density, we use this method of marginalizing, and that's two main difference from what people doing in Jayne's calculation and find the new masses. And also our method can be a probable solution for this problem of too big to be fake. And what are the prospects for the future work is one to find what are the what priors we can put on the Boltzmann function, like the work Afshurdi and et al. Done in 2009, that they show that how the debris and caustics of dark matter can be used to put say about something about phase space density. The other thing is the number of the free parameters that we have. So we are doing this with the binning of 10-10. We have 100 parameters, and it's quite expensive to this calculation. Are there any more sophisticated numerical ways to do this and make this number of bins higher? And the other prospect that we can is to apply this to the other astrophysical system, like the finding the Milky Way or searching for the black holes and finding the black hole masses. And finally, I want to special thanks from Eric Schneider for his help for the numerical simulation, Guillaume for his help in this Monte Carlo Markov chain, and Jesus for help in these missing satellite problems and his suggestions. And thank you very much.
Questions? So you used a, NFW. How sensitive are you to different density profiles?
Yeah, that's a good question. That we can check it by using different profiles. But my assumption is that this high degeneracy that we have in the phase space density and this profile, it's not going to change a lot our results. But we can check it. But for example, for this core cost problem that we have changed the profile a little bit by introducing a new parameter, we get the same result for the mass profile. So you're saying that maybe we should consider this probability that may putting a high mass in the center of these dwarf galaxies and do the calculation again. Yeah, it could be because there are similar analyses by the paper that I show by the Treeman. They use this to find the black hole masses, and maybe we can do this with this. Yeah. Just a singular mass in the, a big mass in the center. Yeah.
It has to do with the evolution of these objects. Somehow they must be somewhere in the universe that has some evolution. beginning or whatever, or middle of the galaxies. And if all galaxies have a black hole, then that explains
it. So that's actually a very interesting idea. There are one or two globulars where there's debate about there being a black hole middle. If you take the scaling relations and push them down to these masses, you get a perfectly sensible but stellar black hole. So you get a 10 solar mass, 100 solar mass black hole. And those probably do exist in some globular clusters. And then one way you see them is that they're these point masses, so they throw things out of the cluster. So you get very strong interactions and hard binaries and X-ray variables and so on from things. Stars interacting very strongly with the black hole. But if you just push the scaling relations down, it does mean you wind up with a very small mass, you know, very concentrated. So you'd sort of hope you might see it some other way, like X-rays.
The angle of an alpha globule is 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's right.
And therefore,
well,
has to do a
but that, again, as I say, that's because globulars only measure a parsec scale. These things measure 10 to 100 parsec scales. So that's where the M over L shoots up to a factor of 100 times larger, because these things allow you to measure over a scale you can't measure in volumes.
So
what's
the figures to show that the luminosity is constant for a range of the distant dwarf galaxies? Can you explain?
So what people are talking about this, that there is some mass scale for these dwarf galaxies, and they go back and see for the structure formation. And they're saying that if the mass scale that we see today by this Jeans method is 10 to the 7 solar masses, in the time of formation that's about the redshift of 10, their mass of formation is 10 to the 9 solar masses. And it's the time that the reionization happened. And maybe this reionization caused that the galaxy formation efficiency come down from the scales below 10 to the 9 solar masses in that redshift. And that's why that you cannot see any galaxies in smaller halo masses. This is one of the solution that they are saying. What there is some mass scales for this dwarf for these satellites. So if there is some mass scale that is same for different luminosity, it say that there is something similar for dark matter halo of all of these galaxies. So if we trace it back to the time of their formation, it's coincidence with the time of their reionization. So that's why they are saying that they have the same mass scale, all of this Milky Way. This is one of the description, but it's not the final word.
I have a question. So your resolution of the phase space density is just fixed by the number of stars? Like you could just push the number of parameters
exactly
arbitrarily high if you have more and more stars
exactly
to get a better picture of the phase space density?
So
what's
if
the practical limitation? I mean, how good is it computational because you have so many stars that it's hard to analyze that many parameters, or you just don't have enough stars so you can't get a higher density?
Exactly, it's two of them. So if so, you have these equations that each star is a constant to your equation. So you cannot go higher than the number of the stars. For example, if you have for the Draco stars, you have 500 stars. You cannot go more than 25/25 beans in the energy and angular momentum. This is one point. The other is that for Fornax, we have 2,000 stars. Okay, but why we cannot? Because this computationally hard to find the convergence in this MCMC method. And if you push if you increase the number of beans, the convergence is very difficult to achieve.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank you.